Greet you in Jesus' name. Yes, as Brother Laban Zimmern used to say, no event, no history. I suppose my daughter will be okay. We'll let her answer that in the hours that follow, but it seems like she's coming back to the land of the living. So we can pray for her and trust that God's way is best. For a message this morning, I had a couple of people suggest that I should consider re-preaching the message that I was asked to share at Shirksville on the dangers of social networking, and I feel intimidated to preach this message here for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a message that has more notes than I have had for many years. If I use them all and go at the typical speed that I go through my notes, you might be here till at least 12 o'clock, because it can take a little while. So I'll try to be efficient. But this subject intimidates me for another reason, and that is that I know that when I stand up to preach about social networking, I end up preaching to a very, very small group of people. Because I know that the majority of people, however you pull them together, already know where they're at in this subject. They're not really all that open to having somebody talk to them about the subject. Now, if I was to take somehow put a graph up here behind me, and I'd start pulling pins out of a pin box, and each pin would represent you as a person. And on the one end of the spectrum, I would say that when it comes to social networking, the extreme left is gonna be, it's a wonderful thing, everybody should have it, there's a lot of good that comes out of it, we shouldn't restrict it at all. And over at this extreme would be somebody, maybe it's a grandpa, and he's saying, I don't understand it, I think it's stupid, I think it's destructive, and I want nothing to do with it. And you'd have that spectrum up here. I could take a pin for each of you and pin you up here. And I don't know if I could do it so much personally, but you and I working together, we could soon figure out where to pin you. And my point in feeling intimidated is that I don't know that till I'm done half hour, 45 minutes from now, anybody's going to want their pin moved. You still pretty much know where you're at on the subject. Why don't people just let us have it? What's the big deal? This is highly destructive. And some of you are going to look at my points and say, he's spot on. Preach it, brother. And others are going to say, he's got it all wrong. And it's a very big subject. What we typically do in subjects like this, when we sit together in church, we typically listen to it and say, that's great, or that's terrible, and then we stay next. Well, I hope this person over here is listening, because they really ought to be getting this. I mean, it's high time they catch on. And again, that's really not what we do with the gospel. It's also intimidating because the dangers of social networking is not really a Bible message. I do want you to turn to Romans 15. I'm going to start with a spiritual reading out of the Bible about interpersonal relations that I think constitutes a typical cross-section of biblical or Christian brotherhood. And I really think there is a gap between what Christian brotherhood is in its fullness versus versus typical social networking in its fullness. I don't think they really mesh together like gears in a transmission. Romans 15, verse 1, I'm going to read the first seven verses to get started. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please our neighbor for his good to edification. For even as Christ pleased not himself, but as it was written, the reproaches of them that approach thee fell on me. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded one toward another according to Christ Jesus, that ye may with one mind and one mouth glorify God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Wherefore receive you one another as Christ also received us to the glory of God. Now in this passage, the Apostle Paul is giving some points about what Christian brotherhood is, or how the Christian ought to live with other Christians. And he says that in a typical social group, you have those that are strong and those that are weak. And this is so normal. It doesn't matter if you go into a third world country, whether you go into an elite society, whether you go into a Christian brotherhood, a Hutterite Bruderhof, and you're going to have weak and you're going to have strong. This is life. This is people. This is how it plays out or stacks up. And he says, in the Christian brotherhood, those that are strong put their arms around the weak and pick them up and hold them up. And it's a community, we call it. And everyone pleases his neighbor for his good to his edification. And then he goes on to say, now this is the example that Christ lived, showed, and practiced. When you look at the life of Christ, it was all about other people. He ministered to them. He healed the sick. He caused the blind to see. He took a widow and raised her dead son. Ministry, ministry, ministry. And it was brotherhood. This is what he taught. And it would be interesting to, I suppose, to let our minds wander this morning where the Nazarene would fit into today's social media culture. Maybe take a little survey and wonder how many of you think Jesus would have a Twitter account? And what would he say if he did? And how many followers would he actually have? There's a very inherent problem with trying to figure out where Jesus fits into that kind of technology and how much we're going to promote it, because the farther we let ourselves go into current technology and whether Christ could have been benefited by it, you can agree with me in your minds that you can only go so far till you have to start thinking within yourself that maybe Jesus came at the wrong time, because his ministry could have been ever so much more if he'd have just had Facebook. And he could have been ever so much more if he could have just blogged. And he could have just been ever so much more. But the Bible says that he came in the fullness of time. Superintending Heavenly Father said, now. And he came. And that's the way it stands. And so we're not going to spend a lot of time on what Jesus would have done with Twitter, because he didn't. I do know this, that his whole life was about going out to people. He would go to them and they would come to him. And a very high percentage of his ministry was face-to-face. There's a couple of cases. The story of the centurion with his servant. He sent him home and the healing got done. They never met. There's a couple of cases where he sent out people to do errands or ministry for him. But the extreme high percent was that he did it himself, face to face. The touch ministry, some people call it. Now, it's not that he didn't have mass media options at his fingertips. When he was born, the heavenly host sang and people heard it. When he was born, the planets and the stars aligned themselves and spoke a message. And there was mass media at his fingertips that Google will never match. Okay? But he did not use it, and that was not him, and that was not his ministry. Even his first generation of followers wrote far more letters than he did. Did Jesus write any books? No. Maybe he didn't have time. It was only a 3.5 year ministry. But you see somebody whose networking was radically personal and touch. And that's something to remember as we think about this. And this is the benchmark. Even as Christ pleased not himself, so we please others. And we use that as a benchmark for our own choices and how we do ministry and how face-to-face we are in what we do to our neighbor for his good, for edification. Now, all of this is done, it says in verse 6. We are one mind, one mouth, we're working together for the glory of God in verse 6. And you can go over to 1 Corinthians 10:31 and you have the same thought coming out, for the glory of God. And it is true in a very general sense that every sin that a man does is a dishonor and a let's see, what's the opposite of glory? Disglory to God. And that in itself is a sin. God told the children of Israel in the Old Testament, you will not take my glory and give it to another. And when we do that, we commit the same sin as the children of Israel. Now let's just stop for a moment and let's talk. When I use the word social networking, what am I talking about? If you have a dictionary, it would say that social networking is the creation and maintenance of business and personal relationships online. It is where you have friends, it's where you have interactions, it's where you have discussions and you have dialogue with people. It can be on a personal level and it can be on a business level. This is huge in our world today. Whatever we're doing, we're talking this morning about doing it on the internet, online, with electronic technology. And we have to understand that while the internet is not inherently bad, neither is it inherently good. In itself, it does not establish its own morality, but rather the use thereof is what determines right and wrong. But it's very broad and it's very vague. Now, I went to the Wikipedia Encyclopedia, which is an online encyclopedia, to study for this message, and I found that that entry alone, when I printed it out, had 28 pages of explanation, and I'm not going to bore you with all of it. Some of it is so technical I didn't understand it, and I couldn't expect you to. Maybe you could more than I did. But it's very long, it's very technical. But there is some pertinent data in there. It says that when it comes to social networking, as of 2013, 70% of Americans use some form of it. It also said that there's a lot to think about. In that 28-page article that I printed out, it listed about 10 benefits of what is good about social networking. I found it fascinating that they also listed 18 dangers that go with it. And it was just, it just caught my interest that right there in what is supposed to be a amoral or non-moral situation where everything is focused on the technology of it, threaded in there is an imbalance. If you would take the old scales, the old balance, and you would put the good and the bad, Wikipedia themselves would tilt it toward the negative. That's how they present it. And they're not Mennonite bishops that are doing this. This is the common people that can write in and get away with it. And this is how they present it as they define themselves. And we won't go over all 10 benefits, and we won't go over all 18 concerns, but we'll lift out some of them. But they describe social networking as a platform to build social networks or social relations among people who have similar interests, similar activities, backgrounds, or real-life connections. Now, you take something like Facebook, and I'll talk a little bit about Facebook this morning because the truth is that that is kind of the king of all social networking. Laura, do you want to go get that cup? I think it's setting out there yet. Facebook is like the big dog on the block. Now, this was started as a network of Harvard University students, and it was just their way of saying, you know what? They were all in the technology study and research departments. This is a way we can network our computers together, and we'll use it to stay in touch after college. But this Mark, I forget his last name now, Zuckerman or ZW something, him and another fella got this idea. Him and another fella got this idea that there's a lot of potential here, and you can get this thing to everybody. And it wasn't well received by the Harvard University students. They were pretty upset with what he did with it, but he didn't care. He dropped out of college and built this, and he said he went way farther with this than he was going to anything else that college ever offered him at Harvard. But and it has grown, and they went worldwide. And today, according to their own data, Facebook has 900 million active users, which is 3 times the population of the United States. Now, those are the people that are actively using it. It's not just the people that have an account and almost never or very little use it. This is somebody that, you know, they didn't give the criteria, but it gave the impression that at least once a day they're updating their page or they're surfing around, reading other people's pages. 900 million. Registered accounts, there's 2.1 billion, which is 1/3 of the world's population, has a Facebook account. And so it ends up being the big dog or the big king of social networking. The closest competitor to it, according to this Wikipedia article, is Twitter, which has 300 million, or about the population of the United States is on Twitter, and Google Plus has about one third of that, which is 100 million. And then Google, Wikipedia went on to list 150 other social networking sites that they knew of. And there's some that are very broad, such as Facebook and Twitter, and there's some that are very selective. You have something like CaringBridge. When somebody has cancer, they'll build a page for them, and now instead of calling every couple days or going to visit, you can just go on the page, and somebody is responsible, and they're updating. They're getting chemotherapy. Their hair is falling out. They're not having a good day today. Pray for them. The blood counts are up. It's not going well. Praise the Lord, things have turned around, and you have this CaringBridge site where you can go online and you can view what's happening in that person's life, and there's some benefit to it because you're not everybody that knows and is concerned and is praying has to contact the individual or that family and get the updates. There's LinkedIn for business professionals, very selective groups. There's Pinterest for recipes. Well, it's actually bigger than that, but that's supposed to be the big reason why you need it. Anything I have, I post on my page, and you can view it. There's even Menno Discuss for the Mennonites. I suppose some of you have heard of Menno Discuss already. That's more of a blogging setup, but I know people that have their own handle, and they're posting on there, and they're saying what they think of this, that, and the other thing, whatever the discussion is. But it's a specific one. The Muslims don't care about Menno Discuss. Social networking gets divided up into either category of place-driven, friendship connections. You know, we went to Bible school in 2014 together, so we have our own little group, and or else review and recommendation systems based on trust. And this is the one side that seldom gets talked about, yet it's actually the kingpin of why Facebook actually took off. And it is a way to watch people and know what they're up to and feed them. Okay, and this is actually the number one use of most of your big networking. Twitter and Facebook are trolling all the time, watching who you're talking to, what you're talking about, and the whole purpose is to know you so that when you go shopping, they can blitz you before you ever get there. And I found it interesting. There's one area that when I go into, if I look at my weather app on my phone, the local lawn and garden supply will come up as an advertisement. And I don't know what the thinking was of why, when I'm looking at the weather in that area, I would be thinking about mowing my yard. But somebody thought about that and said, we'll make that connection. They don't blitz up ads about, I don't know what else you would, but it's just, and I started watching that because you have an app and you have ads that will come up. Now, because of the way my phone's locked, I can't go into them, but they're still coming up. And I know that somebody is doing a cross profile on Dwayne Whitmer, and they're trying to figure out what he wants next. And that is huge in the social networking world. It's one of the main reasons why it exists. Social networking makes it possible for people to connect who have similar interests, similar activities across political, economic, and geographic borders. And I need to tell you that social networking as a concept has always been around. You can go back as far as the Tower of Babel, and the express reason why that tower was being built to reach the sky was, number one, it was anti-God, but number two, everybody that helped build it was going to get knotted together. It's our tower. And they had that common interest, okay? You go back to the early 1900s, and the telephone came along, and then we got the party line. And you would make a call, and sometimes you'd hear a click on the line. And what that meant is the neighbor Mrs. was picking up, and she was just going to listen to what y'all were talking about so that she knew what the news was. Okay? And this went on. I remember it as a child. Of course, we got private lines now, and it's not supposed to happen as much. But there are ways that it still happens. Even today, there is social networking that goes on. If you need the number, I'll give you the Amish chat line, and you can call in, and you can get your social network fix from listen to who died, what the obituary is going to be, who's related to who, how it all ties together, where the next gathering's going to be, what reunions are happening, or you can get the budget. That's social networking. It's always been. So the budget is a way of uniting people with common interests and activities across a political, economical, or geographic border. And it's no secret that something like the budget is a social network, tying people together. Now, the article said that with internet technology as a supplement to fulfill its needs, social network is in turn affecting everyday life, including relationships in school, church, entertainment, and family. Again, you find that online. It's not something a Mennonite bishop made up somewhere. They're recognizing that all this was is an additional step beyond, and it has to be dealt with. You see, with the budget, what does it come, every 2 weeks? You get, you know, you go to the mail on Tuesday, and there it is. And so now you got it, and you open it up. What are they doing in Kelowna, Iowa? What are they doing in Pinecraft, Florida? What are they doing in Myerstown, Pennsylvania? And the way it works is that, well, let me get into that a little bit later. But this is something that, you know, it's a known fact. It's not this way with everybody, but this helps to illustrate the dangers of social networking, and that is that when you have that budget come around, there are some homes that they might not get much of a supper that night because it's going to be tomato soup and cheese sandwiches. Microwave it. You can do your own grilling. I've got the budget. It doesn't happen everywhere, but it has happened. Okay, and this that dynamic, when you put it onto something like Twitter, you can end up with a home where the mom doesn't do any meals anymore because she is busy getting the updates and posting her own thoughts back to them, and nothing happens. And what it is really basically something like the budget on steroids or something like that. I was reading the book Reclaiming Conversation by Sherry Turkle. I think she's a professor at Massachusetts MIT University. And she talked about how that social networking has made such inroads. She tells the story in her book about meeting an old college friend at a public gathering. And she saw him across the room, and they waved to each other and started walking toward each other. But twice in the journey across the room, the man stopped, pulled out his phone, looked at something, answered it, then started walking again. And she said, I knew that in the relationship we were trying to renew, it was being trumped at least twice in the 50-foot walk across the room. And this is something that is going on as part of social networking, a text. A Facebook post, and you can set up your phone that as soon as somebody posts to your account, it dings, and you get to see what they said to you or about you or with you. And then what happens is you end up with the situation that, using that illustration of walking across the room, you end up with people reading things that are less important than the meeting itself. I don't know what he actually read on that phone, and maybe it was a very pertinent, maybe his daughter had just fainted and it was his wife giving her updates every couple seconds of how it's going. On the other hand, it might have been nothing more than just a Twitter spat, just came home from getting groceries. And that got that ended up trumping the reunion of two old college mates. And this is something that sociologists look at and say, I don't think that's all good. We better talk about that. Now, social networking is a resource, and this is what Wikipedia said, for advertising and marketing. And I do understand this the least, but it goes like this. Now, instead of you getting the budget and you flipping through till you find Pinecraft, Florida, what it does is it watches you read your budget. And so when you get it, it's going to have Pinecraft, Florida on the front page at the top one, because that's where you always start. That's where you read the most. Okay? Now, is this all bad? Does it matter if the printer of the budget knows what I want to read first? It's kind of nice. It's more efficient, isn't it? Who wants to read about North Dakota when I really want to have my nose in Holmes County, Ohio? It's efficient. And people think on these terms. And I will admit that if I am looking for a lawn and garden rental tool center online, I would rather they don't be a pop-ups from Indianapolis. I'd rather if they give them the ones that Warriors Mark first. But the only way they're going to do that is they know that the seeker is from Warriors Mark. Or if you put in a much longer into your search engine. And so there's some of it that says it's good, and there's some of it that's kind of troubling. And you look at it and say, well, how much is too much for them to know about me? The other thing that this article said about social networking is that it is largely individual driven. And I would agree with that as I've looked at the landscape. Social networking, whether it's Facebook or Twitter, which again, those are the two big ones, or it's something very small and very isolated, it's going to be driven by about me. In other words, I want it to give me the information I'm looking for. I want the people that ask about it to ask about me, and I'll tell you. And if you want my thoughts on whether or not that cleric from Pennsylvania influences the revolution in Turkey, then check my page, and I'll tell you. And it's awfully empowering to know that 64 people checked me out on this one. This is the way we are wired to work. We like followings, and we like the freedom, we call it, to decide what we put on our page, on our blog, on our projection of ourselves. That feels good. It's empowering. It's nice. And then to see people comment below. And if I don't like the comment, I can bar them off the site. This management is tough. It feels good. And it's addicting for many, many people. But I believe I read in Romans 15, 1 and 3 that life isn't about us. That the profile of reality in the church, in the brotherhood, is that I serve the needs of others. And instead of me blogging out what I think about things, my energies go into, what's the problem here? What can I do for you? Is there a way I can be of resource to you? Tell me. And it takes so much time, and you have to reach out. You have to take initiatives to make those things happen. The dangers. First of all, you have the danger of lost privacy. I've been alluding to this, but you need to understand that anytime, now I'm talking about online, oh yes, there are many, many ways to set up very tight filters, very tight encryption, very tight locks around what we transport between you and I. However, most of those can be cracked. But let's just let that all lay aside. For the most part, most people in our culture don't care. And so when they write an email, there's a lot of people that can look at it, even though you send it to one person. When you put something on Facebook, there's an even lot more people that you're inviting them to come in and look at it. And this loss of privacy is something that it's just like a weed in the middle of the garden. It shouldn't be there. And most of us will look at the garden and say, well, I don't know, if I pull out the weed, I might ruin my garden. Well, what are we going to do about this? But you have to understand that when you post something, a picture, a statement, a voice recording, and we hit send, whatever medium that is, it goes out of our control to a greater or lesser degree, mostly greater. And then it becomes free trade. You send me an email, I can send it to whoever I want to. You have to trust my integrity. And if I don't have any integrity on that particular subject, you are toast. And this is happening again and again and again. And it's destroying homes, and it's destroying marriages, and it's destroying workplace relationships. In 2009, the Philadelphia Eagles had a star player, and they decided he was getting too old. And so they left, shipped him out. I don't know, remember what the story was. But the point is that a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles went on his Facebook page and put like a multi-paragraph rant of how stupid this organization is and how they don't care for their fans and basically just shredded them down. When he got to work, this was on a Sunday, when he got to work Monday morning, he was fired at the door because he worked for the Philadelphia Eagles and somebody else had read his Facebook page and told the boss and the boss fired him Monday morning first thing. And he should have thought that somebody inside the organization was going to see his lack of loyalty, his critical spirit, but in the empowering surge of that moment that I can make a statement against the big boy, I'll do it, and I'll get away with it. But he didn't. Lost his job. Marketing gurus are paid and consider themselves slick if they figure out how to target you. It just goes with it. It's there, and I don't know of a way to 100% eliminate it, and I haven't talked to any programmers that know of a way. You have what you trade off in ability to connect, you get back in security. And when a system is built on the desire to connect, you have two opposing forces clashing against each other. The problem is that we are built as a human being to have a private space and a private world. We can't operate in quiet time 100% of the time. It will destroy us. But if we operate with zero, that also will destroy us. And if you don't come apart, and if you don't go into your closet, and you don't have times of meditation, but that your whole world is consumed in spewing out, sending out, posting, receiving, give, take, it ends up being more destructive than edifying. Number two, the danger of hypocrisy. It is a commonly known problem that people can project themselves differently on the screen or on the keyboard than real life. And this is an old, old problem. You may remember the Apostle Paul being accused of this in his letters. And people said, that man, his letters are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak. They knew of this dynamic of human experience, that you can use mediums to make yourself into somebody that you aren't really in real life. It happened back there, and you take something like Facebook, and it becomes even much bigger. In social networking, it's common for people to make statements of criticism, contempt, or crass praise, and then when they are confronted, they will say something like this. And I've talked to people like this. Well, that's not really me. That's just what I do on the internet. And I don't know if I should laugh at them, pity them. What can be done for somebody that lives in this la-la land, that what they do and in their projections of themselves is the real person? It's who we are. And when we start morphing into a character in the text or talk or blog world that we aren't in real life, we have just fallen for the danger of hypocrisy, and it's there. We have an odd addiction for it. Number three, there is the danger of trolling and bullying. Trolling is what you can do in a river off a bridge with a fish hook. It's where you take a hook and you put a bait on it and you just hang it in the water and you watch for the fish. As they come, you just drag that thing around in front of the fish, hoping they'll bite. Okay? And social networking is full of trolling. It is where people, either in a constructive way of promoting their business, will try to get you pulled in. But it's also something that a fallen man can do to a perfect art and destroy somebody else. Do you remember the old game that is talked about in the school where you walk into school and you agree on the school bus that what you're going to do is when you get into school, you're going to pick out so-and-so and you're going to make them feel sick. And you walk up and say, man, you're not looking very good today. And you walk off. And the next one comes up, are you feeling all right? And by the time school starts, the mom's coming to pick them up. They're sick. And we laugh at that game, but social media is full of that. And the world was rocked in 2008. There's a social network that has pretty much died out called MySpace. But it was a story of Megan Myers and Josh Evans. Megan Myers committed suicide. 13-year-old girl took her own life because she was sick of being bullied by the children at school. This is what she said on her MySpace page, and when the investigators checked it out, it was true. It was all one person. His name was Josh Evans, and he would just blast that girl and blast that girl. But she would never back out of the social circle because she wanted to belong, we assume. That seems to be why people do this. And finally, she decided she couldn't take anymore, and she took her own life. But the horrific part is that there was no Josh Evans. There never was. Josh Evans was a boy created by 11 other schoolmates that set the whole thing up as a game to troll this girl and to bully her. And they pressed it and pressed it until she decided she couldn't take it any longer. Okay, we're talking about the dangers. And so I have to tell you that story to show you the extent of where it can all go with trolling and with bullying. But it happens. The article that I read about this said, thankfully, this is not a big problem, and then it had a couple dots, and then it said, unfortunately, it's a growing one. Yeah, why not? I mean, when the heart of man is set to do evil continually, as this world is morphing into, this is a handy tool in the toolbox. Number four, the danger of egoism and narcissism. Those are big words. Egoism means the doctrine that individual self-interest is the actual motive of all consideration. Look, that's too long. It just means that when you think that I'm the most important person in the world, and you're probably going to be interested in what I'm doing today, let me tell you about it. Narcissism is a love for one's own body. And the problem with narcissism and egoism is way too much self-focus, it's way too much self-projection, and this occupies a tremendous amount of social networking. If you take the top 10 networks in popularity, you will find that the pages are rank with this kind of thing. And what it really is a flavor of pride. It's exactly what Romans 12:3 says. Now listen, Christians, don't think too more highly of yourself than you ought to think. Well, this is what egoism is. It's when you do think too much. And we get this mindset that out there in the internet blue is a group of people that really want to know what I'm up to, and I'll tell them. Last winter, I was shown a Twitter page of somebody I knew, and they had just gotten, well, actually they had been part of a church that said no social networking, and I don't know what all the reasons were, but they left that group and they joined up with one that gave room for this kind of thing, and they started a Twitter account. And what we were looking at is what was up at that point on their Twitter account, and it went like this. Sunday morning, beautiful day. A couple hours later, little sentence, going to church. Couple hours later, coming home from church. Hour or two later, wonderful lunch, beautiful day. And I wanted to giggle to myself because I don't think in real world anybody does that. I mean, nobody's going to leave this place and we're going to look at each other, leaving church. You say, well, it's just like the sign Erica showed me this week. And it was sarcastic. The sign said, I don't have a Facebook or Twitter account, so I just go around announcing out loud what I'm doing at random times. I've got 3 followers so far, but I think 2 of them are cops. This is how you look at people that act like this in the real world. But if you do it on the screen, it's cool. And this is the danger of egoism and narcissism in full play. And it's exactly what church leaders look at when they start saying, you know, there has to be some way that as a people, we're going to just harness this thing in, and we are going to look for ways to live without it, because there's just too many dangers. This is one of them. Number 5 is the danger of wasted time. The Bible calls us to redeem the time. You know that verse from Ephesians 5:16. And online is probably one of the primary ways that time in a person's life is wasted. In South Korea, 2012, there is an actual case of a home where the children starved to death, and the authorities attributed it strictly to the parents' addiction to online time, mostly social networking. In other words, they were so addicted to this that their children starved to death in the next room. Now, that is the most acute I could find. I'm talking about danger, so I go out and get the most acute one I can find and back up from there. However, I do know a couple of things. I know that parents will starve their children physically and emotionally and spiritually for many different reasons, but this is one of them. I know that people will starve their visible relations for their online ones. That's what the man was doing that was checking his phone in the walk across the room. Okay, and whenever we start down that road, we have to start asking ourselves, are we really using the tools of the kingdom as Jesus used them and as they are taught and designed by God? Even in my own experience, we've had a situation where we had to go to a home and say, look, you gotta lay your phone and your laptop down. The dishes aren't getting done. The cleaning isn't getting done. And it's not really any of our business to go around and say, who's cleaning their house? Who's doing their dishes? Who's training their children? But it's not getting done. And when we look at your track log, there is literally hours a day being logged on this sheet. And sure enough, there it was in the social media realm, checking, sending, posting. The functions of daily life aren't happening. And it's just, this problem of wasted time. That parent, that set of parents is called to provide for their own. And maybe along the way, to be fair, maybe they are learning some things online that would make them better parents. But it's kind of inconsequential. It's kind of like reading up on vitamins while you chew on paraffin. It's like, so, Anyway, you can see how the priorities get reshuffled as people sell out to the addiction of social networking. Well, let me just give you four ingredients that I picked up in my study. I picked up a book a number of years ago called The Church of Facebook. I think I got it in 2010. And it was an interesting book to me because it talks about the whole culture of the thing and the pieces that have come and gone and what it has all done. But toward the end, they start down this question that I feel is a very foundational one. And that is, at the end of the day, if you build a world of relationships online, what do you actually have? If you have 3,000 followers, what do you actually have? If you have people that you interact with, 150 persons, what do you actually have? And so they went out, and this writer, he went out, and he found a forum that was being exercised of four men that are asking the question of what is community? In light of online networking, what is community? And then these men were wrestling with it. Now I'm going to quote the Mennonite preacher that they had on that forum. His name was Shane Hipps, and he is the lead pastor of Phoenix Mennonite Church, which is a General Conference Mennonite church, and he's an active blogger. And his point was that while he does that, he recognizes that what he is doing is not authentic community. That's his platform. He says, I do it for entertainment. I do it as a way to get more information, but I acknowledge and I state that what I am doing is not community. And then he goes on to explain what he believes community is. And I really connected with it. And it, to me, it brings you back to a spiritual point where we can drive a stake in the ground and say, this is the ideal. Let's go for it, brothers and sisters. He says that authentic community has four ingredients. Number one, you have a shared history. How many of you were here when Jenny passed out in the singing? We have shared history, okay? Now, when I shared this message at Shirksville, I asked how many were at Bible school when Jane Garman dumped the cake on the floor. And Lloyd, her husband, got all red. He was there, and he and I laughed about it. But everybody else just kind of, they weren't there. They don't have shared history. So if you want community, you're going to have shared history. Single events. Now, the second one is an extension of that, and that is you have to have permanence. And that is nothing more than when you have shared history and shared history and shared history and shared history. Not only were you there when she passed out during the singing, but you were there when the first service was, or you were there when we had a conference here, or you were there when we helped Peggy move, or you were there, okay? This is permanence. This is when you take event, and you put it together, and you have a history of permanence, okay? This is one of the things that makes moving to a new community so gut-wrenching, because you've got to give up your permanence and restart it, okay? And it's probably the primary reason why most people either like or don't like it. Some people create a world where they don't have permanence. They don't want permanence. They want to keep it fluid. They want to keep it flowing, and there is less accountability in a world like that, but there's a treasure you miss as well. Now, the third piece, he says, this coming from this Mennonite preacher in Phoenix, he says, is proximity. You got to be here. I mean, okay, there's going to be people that are going to hear about what happened here in church, but they're not going to be part of the community because they weren't here. They were not close enough to see it happen, okay? And some of you only heard about it after the ruckus started, okay? All this is talking about is when you get community, when you're together, when you're within reach. And it's one of the reasons why I just feel like we have to be a dog about our people living together, not just spreading out over. I think that one congregation that for years has had an hour and a half from their extreme members, and you go ask any of them, did you ever visit their home? Nope, never been there. Never even went for Sunday dinner? No, it's just, hey, it's too far. I mean, till we leave church, go up there, get back home, get the meal cookout. Okay, then you don't have community. That's the ugly truth. They will never have community in that setting, and that is exactly why that congregation, in my opinion, call me wrong if you'd like, but I still think that's the primary reason why they have gone 20 years and still feel like they're not close. They don't have proximity. Now, it's true that we got nicer highways, and we got nicer things, better cars, and we can drive farther in less time, and so we make our bishops run farther, we spread it out, but we end up sacrificing community. This is the way it works. And the fourth thing that makes a community is shared imagination or vision. When you look into the future, where are we at now, and we project in the future, if you and I can come together on this and we can pursue it together, that gives us community. Now, Shane says this. He says the problem with social media is that it really only ever is built on the last one. You cannot, in social media, you cannot have proximity other than keyboard to keyboard. You can have shared history if you do it long enough. And of course, that spawns a whole bunch of sociologists thinking that maybe, just maybe, we're actually going through a metamorphosis, that as relationships die through social networking, we're waiting for the next generation to rise up who has grown up with it, and it'll be a new bright day because they'll be recalibrated and they can work with it. We'll see. And Shane says that the problem is that you can connect awfully much online in vision and perception and dreams, but it's really, really hard to do it on history, on permanence and proximity. And this is why he believes that whatever we have online can never be counted as brotherhood or community. And I really connected with it. I feel like he's onto something. One more point, I'll keep it short. But in my studies, I ran across something really interesting, and it's kind of the point that I really want to preach a second message on this, because I don't particularly care for messages that just look out at something dangerous or vulnerable or questionable or potentially bad. I'd really like to spend another equal amount of time showing how the scriptures want us to build a community with these four components. It's written from the very baptism of Christ into what we have today. But I want to talk about one more thing. Many years ago, how many of you ever heard of Bill Gore? Not Al Gore, but Bill Gore. Anybody know of him? I thought we might have 100 or 200 that know about him. He is the man that developed Gore-Tex. So if you ever heard of Gore-Tex clothing, Bill Gore came up with that. Now, Bill Gore started a plant, and they're making clothing. And one day, Bill goes out into his plant, and he realizes that he doesn't know everybody that works at his plant anymore. And he feels bad about this, and he goes back in his office, and he's sitting there thinking, he said, how'd this happen, and can I change it? Because he wanted a plant, a manufacturing facility, where there was community inside the plant. And he, as he pondered over this, he came to the conclusion that it was about the time that his business grew to about 150 employees that things started to disconnect, and he began to disconnect from his own employees. And he thought about that, and one day he's talking to his friend, Robin Dunbar, and he's telling Robin this, and Robin is intrigued because Robin is a sociologist from Great Britain. And this is back in 1992, and so Robin says, you know what? That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to go home and do some research on this. And he has spent the rest of his life up to this point. Today, if you go into the psychological or sociological world and you say Dunbar's number, somebody will say 150. And they all attribute it to this Robin Dunbar, who has researched this out. And he finds that community begins to suffer when the social connection, personal social connections, pass 150 people. And he says, this man from Great Britain has researched this to the point that he's even gone up to Canada and researched the Hutterites. And he says that the Hutterites start a new Bruderhof when their adults get to be about 150. They feel like, and they asked him why, and they said, they don't know. It just seems like that's where we start to get disconnected. We live here, but we don't know who the people are over there. Then he found this group of people in Lancaster County called the Amish, and he found that they often start a new district whenever their district gets to about 150. They'll split that thing and get another bishop. And he asked them why they did it, and they said, well, they don't know. They just, they didn't know there was a number. It's just about where it feels like, hey, if we're going to have church, you know, we better just get another district. And you can find these writings online. It's just fascinating to me. And he also says that the whole social structure he has found is built up and down in increments of about 3 from that 150 number. In other words, okay, the Romans had centurions, over 100 men. And they had moved that number down from 150 initially because they wanted the centurion to be very tight with their men. And they felt like 150 was too big. But you can break it down till if you take a group of 150 divided by 3, you get 50. You divide by 3, you get about 13. And it's interesting. And you take something like a death, there's going to be about 15, 20 people at the most that you're going to, in the spur of that moment, you want them to know that your wife died. Now, there might be 50 more that you're glad they know, and there's 150 about that you're pretty sure are going to find out within the first hour, and then there's about 1,500 that you're pretty sure will find out, recognize it, and care. Robin Dunbar says that most of us can retain about 1,500 names personally face-to-face. Now, there's some really smart ones that can get up as high as 2,000, and there's some of us that are kind of on the slow side, or we forget a lot, and we're about 35. But it's just intriguing how there's a social order that a man from Britain could study about Amish and Hutterites and Gore-Tex employees, and he says this is about what you can maintain. Here's the problem. And that is, if you press social networking into that kind of frame of world, there's no logic to it. A Twitter follower that would have 150 followers isn't much of a success. You want to be a movie star with 1.3 million. Now you're going somewhere. Except those are the people that kill themselves with painkillers because something hurts. And they still haven't figured out what hurts. But Prince, Michael Jackson, you just go back through the list, something hurts. It's the system wasn't big enough to feed them. And so we still come back to this thing, let those who are strong reach out to those who are weak and bear their, even as Christ did. And in this, we're one mind and one body, and we can bring glory to God. And it's a radically different world than what you do with your keypad or your, that spot. And sooner or later, I think we're gonna have to choose. Because I don't think you can feed both satisfactorily. Let's pray.